Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, devotees, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 28, titled Kapila's Instructions on the Execution of Devotional Service. And this morning we are reading verse 38. Deho pi. Did I chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya? I did. No, I did.
Yes.
I did. Okay. So let's begin again. Deho pi daiva vashaga. Kalo karma yavat swarambakam prati samikshita eva sasu tam sa prapancham adirudha Samadhi, Yoga, Svapnam, Punar, Na, Bhajate, Pratibuddha, Vasto, Deho Pidaiva, Vashaga, Kalu Karma, Yavat. Swarambakam prati samikshata eva sasu. Tamsa prapancha madhiruddha samadhi yoga. Swapnam purnana bhajate prati buddha vastu. Deho pidaiva vashaga kalu karma yavat. Swarambakam prati samikshata eva sasu. Tamsa prapancha madhiruddha samadhi yoga. Swapnam purnana bhajate pratibuddha vastu. Deho pidaiva vashaga kalu karma yavat. Swarambakam prati samikshata eva sasu. Tamsa prapancha madhiruddha samadhi yoga. Svapnam punarna bhajate pratibuddha vastu.
Deho pidaiva
Under the control of the personality of Godhead. Kalu. Indeed. Karma. Activities. Yavat. As much as. Swarambakam. Begun by himself. Pratisamikshate continues to function. Eva, certainly. Sa'asu, along with the senses. Tam, the body. Sa-prapancham, with its expansion. Adiruddha Samadhi Yoga, being situated in Samadhi by yoga practice. Svapnam,
born in a dream.
Punna,
again.
Na,
not.
Bhajate.
he does accept as his own. Prati Buddha, awake. Vastu, to his constitutional position. Translation. The body of such a liberated yogi, along with the senses, is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it functions until its destined activities are finished. The liberated devotee, being awake to his constitutional position and thus situated in samadhi, the highest perfectional stage of yoga, does not accept the byproducts of the material body as his own. Thus, he considers his bodily activities to be like the activities of a body in a dream. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The following questions may be posed. As long as the liberated soul is in contact with the body, why don't the bodily activities affect him? Doesn't he actually become contaminated by the action and reaction of material activities? In answer to such questions, this verse explains that the material body of a liberated soul is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not acting due to the living force of the living entity. It is simply acting as a reaction to past activities. Even after being switched off, an electric fan moves for some time. That movement is not due to the electric current, but is a continuation of the last movement. Similarly, although a liberated soul appears to be acting just like an ordinary man, his actions are to be accepted as the continuation of past activities. In a dream, one may see himself expanded through many bodies, but when awake, he can understand that those bodies were all false. Similarly, although a liberated soul has the byproducts of the body, children, wife, house, etc., he does not identify himself with those bodily expansions. He knows that they're all products of the material dream. The gross body is made of the gross elements of matter, and the subtle body is made of mind, intelligence, ego, and contaminated consciousness. If one can accept the subtle body of a dream as false and not identify with oneself with that body, then certainly an awake person need not identify with the gross body. As one who is awake has no connection with the activities of the body in a dream, an awakened, liberated soul has no connection with the activities of the present body. In other words, because he is acquainted with his constitutional position, he never accepts the bodily concept of life. Deho pidaiva vashaga kalu karma yavat swarambakam pratisa mimshata eva sasu tam sa prapancha madhiruda samadhi yoga svatnam purnarna bhajate pratibuddha vastu. The body of such a liberated yogi, along with the senses, is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it functions until its destined activities are finished. The liberated devotee, being awake to his constitutional position and thus situated in samadhi, the highest perfectional stage of yoga, does not accept the byproducts of the material body as his own. Thus he considers his bodily activities to be like the activities of a body in a dream. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shamati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaura Vani Prachani Nira Vishesha Shunyavadi Pastya Chadeshitani Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchikat Charubhyas Cha Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Cha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Hare Krishna. So, here then, Lord Kapila is describing another aspect of the transcendental situation of the liberated yogi. Of course, we know there are these two perspectives that we have been and continue to be presented with directly and or indirectly. Those are the perspectives of one, first of all, the particular type of yogi that Lord Kapila is talking about means the Sankhya yogi, Ashtanga yogi, that sort of yogi. But then, as Srila Prabhupada has pointed out from time to time, these things apply to the devotees in somewhat different ways depending on the particular whatever is involved. But there are these two types of relevance, and we need to keep that in mind and not apply at least some of these understandings absolutely directly in Krishna consciousness, like the whole point about just focusing the mind. Just focusing the mind, doing breathing exercises, and in this way, developing the capability to focus the mind, to control the mind, and then focus the controlled mind. Of course, we want to, not we want to, we must do, control the mind and focus the mind properly on what the mind should be focused on, which is Krishna. Krishna and Krishna's service, Krishna's instructions, the devotees, their instructions, particularly the very advanced devotees, particularly the spiritual master. These things need to be done, but the procedure is somewhat different. And it's very important to grasp this. It's very important to grasp this. Otherwise, as happens with some people, they read Shastra and they don't understand, in certain cases particularly, like this, they don't understand that this is a particular perspective on what is ultimately a greater subject. And in order to understand it properly and to apply it properly, ultimately, to apply it properly, one needs some specific instruction. One needs some specific instruction. Otherwise, one will make the mistake of thinking a particular approach, a particular form of practice of Krishna consciousness is really what we're meant to do, whereas in terms of the detailed specific activities, it may not actually be like that. There may be some more specialized application which we have to learn about, in terms of it being Kali Yuga, in terms of the ways that we're meant to practice Krishna consciousness in this day and age. So there are examples of this here and there in different places, in Srimad Bhagavatam, even in Bhagavad Gita also. For example, in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 6th chapter, it's a very clear-cut example. In the right at the beginning of the 6th chapter, Parikshit Maharaj, having heard at the end of the 5th chapter about the horrors of the hellish planets, it's just completely incredible. So as a soft-hearted devotee, he feels concerned that if we don't do something to help the conditioned souls, if we don't help them to become Krishna conscious, ASAP, then so many of them are going to have to go to those places. And it's just going to be a ghastly, ghastly time for them, just too much. And a soft-hearted devotee, like Maharaj Parikshit, will feel strongly that we have to do something to help. So then at the beginning of the 6th chapter, the discussion continues, and the question rises, what to do? Maharaj Parikshit asks, what can we do? How can we help these people who will otherwise go to hell if they don't get some quite strong help pretty quickly? So he asks that question, what process can they undertake? And Shukadev Goswami, the guru, the instructor, the authority, he presents the idea, well, they could always do prayaschitta. They should do prayaschitta. This is what he says. Prayaschitta meaning a form of material activity in which one counteracts the effects of bad activities that one has performed by just doing some good activities, and in this way rebalancing one's karma so that one is no longer in a very serious deficit with bad karma, and therefore one's going to have to go to those hellish planets. So this is the proposal of Shukadev Goswami. But then Maharaj Parikshit says, wait a minute. Surely that's not really like the best thing. What's going to really help them? We want to really help them. Surely if they just do some sort of balancing act with the reactions of their bad activities and reactions of their good activities, surely it's not going to really help them so much, because the seed from which their bad activities have grown, the seed is still there. And it's such a seed, it will not just go away. While it's there, then problems will occur. Serious problems will occur, and the person will inevitably sooner or later, somehow or other, get back on that same track to the hellish planets by doing some nonsense activities. So surely we need a different process. And Shukadev Goswami, sort of, you could say, congratulates him or appreciates that you've understood that just balancing one type of material activity with another type of material activity is not the answer, particularly in this case, or in any case really, but specifically here now in this case of having become a candidate for the hellish planets. Yes. So then he starts instructing Maharaj Parikshit in the famous and extremely valuable narration, the story of Ajamin, and how he was a first-class candidate for the hellish planets. Maybe he would have spent some time in one hellish planet suffering in that particular way for some particular set of sinful activities he performed, but he performed other sets, other types of sinful activities, so then he would go on a tour visiting different of the hellish planets. He would go to some other hellish planet and then horribly suffer in some other way, and then probably another type of hellish planet. Because we read there in the last chapter of the fifth canto that if someone, for example, eats meat, that sort of thing, becomes involved in that sort of thing, there's a particular type of hellish planet for them. But if someone takes intoxication, for example, then there's a different hellish planet with quite a different type of suffering. Can I make a suggestion? I don't think we need to bring our phones to the class, do we? Unless there's some super urgent business, he said, looking around for his phone. And I must say, I do recall in the temple room many years ago when we used to have gatherings, like, you know, substantial gatherings, telling the devotees to turn off their phones, and my phone then rang. I remember that vividly. And one can always make a joke about it, but still. All right, so here, this is another case. This is another case where some instruction is being given to take up some particular program of activity in order to help oneself progress in yoga, in God consciousness. But actually for us, that particular program of activity, breath control, is not practical. It will not work. We may try. It will not work. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada, of course, pointed out that we need to chant the holy names of the Lord. And that will work. And it does work. That's our experience, that it works. It's amazing, actually. Of course, one has to take it seriously. One really does. But if one does that, then one finds it really works. Whereas the proposal of let's do some breathing exercises to get control of the mind so that when it is controlled, it can be focused on the Lord, and one can enter into some meditation on the Lord and come to an advanced level, that's just not going to work. It's just not going to work. So, therefore, we can appreciate the essential, the need of having someone like Srila Prabhupada, the members, bona fide members of our Guru Parampara, that is so essential. Otherwise, even if one sticks to Shastra, the likelihood of mistakes, and mistakes which may sort of stop one's progress, the likelihood of such mistakes, it's more or less inevitable that such mistakes will happen. Anyway, that's just one point, by the way. But here, an interesting point is made that the advanced liberated yogi, or we could say advanced devotee, that the body, including the senses of that advanced devotee, advanced yogi, is taken charge of by the Supreme Lord, and therefore it just goes on functioning in the ways that it has been going on until the prescribed time of departure is reached. Every one of us has first of all, we have a Best Buy time on our heads, although we can't exactly see it. So Best Buy is one thing, but the point of just being thrown away because we just, that's it, it's the end. That's also there. It's also there for all of us. And there's enough of us here who are in the later stages of the whole process. There's enough of us. So this is how it will work. This is how it does work for the advanced devotee. And Srila Prabhupada describes it very nicely in the purport, that first of all, Prabhupada raises a couple of questions, that as long as we're in these bodies, including the liberated souls, the very advanced devotees, as long as, while we're still in the body, our bodies, then how could it be said that in the case at least of the advanced devotee, the liberated yogi, the bodily activities don't affect them? Wouldn't it be that they also become contaminated by the actions and reactions of activities, like the ordinary conditioned souls become contaminated? Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, the discussion is there, and it's there in Prabhupada's literatures, that in so many ways the devotees are doing things which on the surface are exactly like, or exactly not just like, but exactly the same things that the non-devotees do. Like, our devotees now, a few of them, what are they cutting? Beans, is it? The bean queens, yes. We used to have one devotee in Cato Ridge we called the bean queen. Anyway, that's okay. So, this cutting of beans is being done for Krishna. It's special. It's different, because it's devotional service. But on another level, at least your ordinary person will say, no, it's not. It's just the same thing. The same beans, bought from the same place, grown by the same people, being cut up in the same ways. So, what's the difference? But of course, there's a vast difference. The difference between vikarma and akarma. Vikarma meaning sinful activity, which binds the person to this world, and akarma meaning activity which is free from any type of reaction because it's being done for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, including making sweets, is it? Anyway, you know what I mean. So it works. These things work in different ways. And Prabhupada here gives an example that he gives in different places. It's one of the first examples, actually, that I heard when I joined the temple many years ago. The example of the electric fan. That the electric fan, when it's unplugged, when it's no longer connected with the source of power, for a little while it still spins. And you look at it and you think, yeah, it's spinning just like when it's plugged in. So it's the same. But it's not. It's no longer connected. But still some sort of something is there in relation to the initial activity. Prabhupada, what does Prabhupada say? That yes, in the case of the fan, it is simply acting. The electric fan, after being switched off, an electric fan moves for some time. That movement is not due to the electric current, but is a continuation of the last movement. Similarly, although a liberated soul appears to be acting just like an ordinary man, his actions are to be accepted as the continuation of past activities. So for us, some of us, for example, some of us have male bodies, some have female. And in many ways, we're performing activities, those with male bodies, performing activities which are just activities that people with male bodies form and perform, and vice versa. Someone is cooking and doing things like this, someone is managing. And these are activities which men do, or these are activities which ladies do. So they're going on in terms of the previous actions, of the previous ways of life. But the devotees who are with the male bodies, who are doing male-type activities, and at least in certain cases, those activities have no reactions, karmic reactions. Whereas the ordinary people in male bodies who are, for example, doing some management, or in female bodies who are doing some cooking, some cutting of vegetables, for them, there's reactions. There's definitely reactions. So the point is for the devotees that we need to come to that state of consciousness. We need to do that in order for our situation in life to be like that. And Srila Prabhupada gives a further example, which is another very nice example. Prabhupada gives the example that that we dream, even devotees, sometimes we dream of different things. But when we dream, when we wake up, we know it was just a dream. We don't need to take it seriously. You know, occasionally devotees get messages through dreams from the Lord. There are stories of that in our literatures. But so often what we dream of, even as devotees, there's no real substance to it, there's no real sort of consequence to it. It's just the mind doing some things. So when we wake up, then we understand, oh, that was just a dream, so what? So Prabhupada says that if one can accept the subtle body of a dream as false and not identify oneself with that body, then certainly an awake person need not identify with the gross body. And therefore, as Prabhupada also says, although a liberated soul has the byproducts of the body, children, wife, house, etc., he doesn't identify himself with these bodily expansions. Therefore, he remains fully engaged in devotional service and not just caught up in the very typical circumstances of material life. And even when the devotee has to give attention to body, to children, wife, and related things, but the advanced devotee at least relates with all these things or people in Krishna consciousness. That I'm maintaining my family in Krishna conscious ways, in ways which will help them progress in Krishna consciousness, and not just fulfilling their material desires or my own material desires, but using the money that I earn to provide different facilities which will help them in their Krishna consciousness. This is the application of these principles here for us as practicing devotees. So then, when the devotee is really absorbed in the way of life like that, then Krishna takes charge of the body and the senses. And when Krishna takes charge, the body, the senses, the mind, the intelligence, then the devotee finds that there's no inclination, or step by step, less inclination, attraction to performing material activity, less and less interest, but rather greater and greater inspiration and enthusiasm to perform activities in devotional service, and greater and greater experience of the nectar of Krishna consciousness in doing that. So as Prabhupada says, in other words, because the advanced devotee is acquainted with his constitutional position, he never accepts the bodily concept of love. But under the shelter of Krishna, under the shelter of Lord Krishna, the devotee accepts that, who am I? I am a devotee. What activities should I perform? I should do devotional service and not get caught up on the material level. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.